So hi, and welcome to the 16th episode of the Language Mandarins podcast. My name is Jonathan, and today I have a special guest. This is my friend Maria Bariseva, who is one of my language exchange partners who I met through the GoSpeaky platform. So thank you for joining us, Maria. How are you doing?
Thank you. Hi, I'm fine. Today is a special day for me.
Yes,
today is my daughter's birthday. So I feel myself very, very happy.
Cool. So se danyom rozhdeniya for your daughter. So happy birthday to her.
Спасибо. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how long we've been in contact. I think maybe about a year now or so, but I think we exchanged messages through GoSpeaky, and then mostly just text messages for several months, and then I think we at some point we decided to start kind of doing video video discussions like twice a week, once a week, and then that's been, I've really enjoyed that. So how have we organized that a little bit?
I think we began to have our video discussions from November. From October.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, from October. Before it, we had only your Saturday's session.
Okay.
And
that's
after
true.
That, I think in October, yes, we began to speak twice a week.
That sounds familiar. I think with the Facebook group, yeah, I think we started to have Saturday hangouts, like a once a week with a couple of the people from the Facebook group. And then I think when I joined the Language Heroes group on VK, I think that's when I decided to start really focusing on my Russian studies. So so thank you. Yeah, I appreciate your helping me out with the Russian. So it's there's been many sessions where we've started what was at 5:30 my time, and actually right now as we speak it's about 10 to 6 in the morning, I have said this when I've told a lot of people about doing language exchanges early in the morning. I've told them that sometimes you've been very diligent about telling me, Jonathan, tolka na ruskom, keep speaking in Russian, and it's been a bit of a challenge to do that early in the morning. And at the end of the session of about 45 minutes, an hour, I think my brain is just, it's really wired to a point that it's more stimulating than a cup of coffee. So thank you for those sessions. It's been really enjoyable to kind
Зарядка.
Of...
Зарядка для ума. Morning exercises for brain, for your brain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a whole routine, a whole workout. So so that's been enjoyable. And so you also, aside from learning English, because we're exchanging Russian and English, you also teach English to Russian students.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but they are little students, quite little. They attend, I'm a little bit nervous. I forget
no problem.
The modest words.
Elementary school, preschool, how old are they?
They are beginners in English. So I teach just basic level of English, but it's also not very easy because they never heard about this language before school, before our lessons.
And so you go through the complete beginning initiation of the language. And what are some difficulties that you see for Russian speakers or children, Russian speakers, when they begin studying English?
Probably first of all, it is pronunciation of sounds, because we have different sounds in Russian and in English. And the next is, you know, it's not very clear for us when the word order in the sentence should be we should use words in the order.
For example, like the subject, verb, object, and then the adverbs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. In Russian, we can mix words in the sentence and it still will be understandable.
Yeah, that's true. I think I have studied this a little bit. For me, learning Russian, I've seen that the word order is a little bit more flexible because of the declensions, because of the different cases. You can place a little bit more emphasis on certain words by changing the order in a Russian sentence, which you can't really do so easily in an English sentence. And I think I also see this. Interestingly, I think I see all this for Spanish speakers when they are speaking English, because the word order in a Spanish language is also, they don't have cases, but they do have a lot of flexibility in their syntax. And oftentimes this creates problems when those students are trying to write things in English. And I think I also saw this when I was doing a lot of my translation work from Spanish to English, where there'd be so much content in just really random order sometimes, and trying to get it back into the English word order was usually kind of like mental gymnastics of, it was almost like solving a crossword puzzle of, I need to get this element here, I need to put this here, and it's not always a very simple, straightforward task. It seems natural to me as an English speaker because it's my native language, but the more I study some of these other languages like Spanish or Russian and realize that those languages have something that's more flexible and more adaptable to expressing a different emphasis, I realize that English is very rigid in the word order, and even the way we kind of process the information as listeners, we try to express that with our voice, and also try to hear that when somebody's telling us about, here's the subject, okay, now here's the verb, okay, next, okay, here's an object, what happened, where did it happen, how did it happen? And we try to sequence that and give that information to our listeners, and we try to listen for that. So it's interesting to see that as a foreign language speaker, of how do you process the information? I think it's probably a little more flexible. Based on the cases.
Mm-hmm. And you know, probably the main problem in basic English for my students, at least, it is the verb to be, because we haven't this verb in our present times, and you have, and it is a quite problem. They often forget to put to be in the sentence,
mm-hmm.
especially when they try to make a question sentence.
Okay.
What they should do with to be, where it
okay.
should be in the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So it is also a problem, and it's probably one of the main problems.
Okay. Is it difficult for Russian speakers to also pick up like some expressions like to have or to go, or is that actually simple to pick up?
I think it is more simple than okay. when we talk about to be, because to be is in present simple. It is, we always use this verb, and you know, it is. I am not sure I will pronounce this right. It is an auxiliary verb.
Yes, auxiliary verb. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And other verbs are active verbs of action, and it's not a problem to use them, but we often have problems with auxiliary verbs because we haven't such verbs in Russian. At least we didn't separate them as an auxiliary verbs.
That's true. I think there are many other languages which have their verb conjugations and also the negative forms, which are a little bit more straightforward. The English verb system with the auxiliary verbs of be, do, have, will, I think this does complicate things a little bit for speakers where in, for example, some of the Romance languages and I suppose that could be extended to some of the Indo-European languages, which like Russian is one of them. So to say, you know, I speak and then I don't speak, you just add the negative of like не, я не говорю, я говорю. I think just that simple addition of a negative word of a no or a не. It for me as an English speaker, I think it's easier to pick up those languages because of just that simple nature of add a word no. But I think the reverse, people learning English and having to adapt to this idea that there are extra verbs that do that work for you, and it's not the action verb. It makes things a little bit more difficult, I think.
Yes, it is. It is really makes it really makes things more difficult, especially for kids, because it's difficult to explain why, especially when you begin to translate such sentences like I am a girl, я есть девочка. We never use есть in Russian. And they often begin to laugh. For what reason we use yeast, we use to be.
Yeah, I think any language when you have children kind of comparing one to the other, and obviously their focus is their native language. I think anything that is kind of a bit strange or deviates from that is an opportunity to kind of question. I don't think children usually question of which language is right and wrong. I think it probably takes an attitude of like, well, this one is weird. My language does this thing. This is logical. So why would this language, why would they do it that way? And I think even adults, they have that kind of a cultural relationship where I think one of the sources of cultural culture shock is a little bit of like, why did this suddenly, why do they do it that way? If you'll excuse me for one moment, I had this problem in a previous podcast where one of my sponsors wanted to come in for a commercial break. I will be right back with you in 1 second.
Okay.
And we're back from that commercial break from our sponsor. So once again, my three-year-old son who loves to come in when I am expecting him to be asleep and he's not, or away. So. But speaking about children and the languages. But so as I was saying, with culture shock, even adults, we kind of have this expectation that other cultures, other languages should do things the way we do it, but they don't. So I think the first time I went abroad to visit Europe when I was 17, I think it really exposed just different cultures, people speaking different languages. And even if I had studied some Spanish when I was like 14 or 15, I was living in the States, so I didn't really have that culture kind of directly interacting with me. But I think so sometimes with as children, we have difficulties of why do they do it this way with the language.
Yes.
And does do your English classes, do they influence the way you study English?
Yes, probably. If I understood your question well, sometimes I use the same sources to learn English by myself and to teach my kids. Of course, especially it is the internet sources. Like cartoons in English, like some websites that that can be interesting for kids, where there are some games with words or with word orders, crosswords, the stuff, the things like this.
Yeah, I think I sometimes try to use some teaching materials for children sometimes to like, get some of the real basics, like the alphabet, the numbers, what else, colors, basic vocabulary. However, sometimes when I'm dealing with like children's stories, it turns out that some of the material is a lot more complicated than it's useful, because I think children, by the time they're actually getting exposed to children's stories, I think they're familiar with their native language for at least 3, 4, or 5 years. So they actually have a lot of vocabulary through listening. And I see this when I look at children's stories in English. There's the structures, the vocabulary. There's a lot of complicated details that are in the stories. So I think sometimes as an adult, if we try to use some of that material, I think we can get a little frustrated because there's just more content that we have to deal with. And just because something is for a child doesn't necessarily mean that it's simple. And how is your experience with that? Do you find that some materials for children learning English, do you feel that sometimes those are complicated as an adult learner?
Yes, especially in the study books. You know, sometimes there are some strange words and not very popular, and kids should learn it by heart. And I don't know what's the reason of doing it. And some words, some slang words that are also in study books and student books, and it's not very helpful in my opinion, at least. Mm-hmm. But you know, I often I'm not a school teacher, so I'm free to choose what I want and how I want to teach kids. So of course, before every lesson, I browse some websites, some books, of grammar or of vocabulary in the theme, for example, colors and or I don't know, furniture, something like this. And after that, I make my own lesson with parts of these different materials, different things.
And how do you usually organize your lesson? Is it like a half hour, an hour? How long are your lessons usually?
It is usually an hour, 60 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And at the beginning of the lesson, we usually play with cards. My students make cards with words. From one side, they write down the word in Russian, from another side in English. And then I show them a card in Russian, for example, so they should write down it in English. It is our first game. After that, we work with grammar, with new words, and sometimes in the middle of the lesson, sometimes in the end of the lesson, we watch a little cartoon or we listen to a little podcast in English, and then we discuss it. So, because I'm sure that the best pronunciation, it is a native speaker pronunciation. So every lesson I try to switch on something like cartoon or podcast. I'm sure they need to hear, to listen the real pronunciation of the words.
Okay. I've been kind of developing, the more I speak English with foreigners and then realize I'm actually a minority as a native speaker, and that I realize more and more there are speakers of English as a foreign language or as a second language, that group of people, they completely outnumber English-speaking native speakers. And so I'm not sure there are enough materials out there that emphasize the accents or the way of speaking for those people who speak English as a foreign language. And I think we sometimes do place a lot of emphasis, or maybe too much emphasis, on native speakers. And I think if English has its position as a lingua franca of many of the world's communication, I think it's important also that we kind of teach students to become familiar with foreign accents so that they develop their ear and they also maybe get used to maybe typical mistakes or maybe typical syntax or what else could be involved in there, or just cultural differences that people are expressing English, they're expressing their culture in English and not just imitating an English native speaker.
I agree with you, Jonathan. And you know, I often try to compare at least two different English, British English and American English, because there are lots of differences between these parts of one language. And it is a way to make the language more interesting for kids, because they can compare, for example, different words like autumn and fall, or different pronunciation. And it is very interesting. Kids like, children like this.
Do you also try to include, I don't know, a German speaker speaking in English, or a Spanish speaker speaking in English? Do you ever try to include examples like that?
No, I never did. Mm-hmm. I never did. Okay. You know, I have... not so much time to do it.
Yeah, because I think that's something I'm going to try to include a little bit more frequently in my lessons, is to try to, as especially as some students, adult learners, have to speak English as a foreign language to other cultures, and not just with Americans or not just with people from the UK. I think it's important that they become more familiar with some of these kind of different accents, different syntax, different vocabulary trends. But so it's kind of a new resource that I'm trying to promote with for my students, at least. Mm-hmm. And sorry.
I just want to say that I'm not sure it is a good idea for me as a teacher of children, because they should know the right English, not without any accents. But for adults, yes, I think it is an interesting idea, because as I know, different people from different countries has their own accent, and it's very, very interesting to listen to them.
Yeah, I think as I listen to foreigners who are speaking English, and or at least living in the States, or who I talk to on the internet, I think having a foreign accent is not necessarily such a bad thing. I think it's part of our identity, and I think there are a lot of students who try to kind of eliminate their accent, or they try to improve their accent. But I would say there's some kind of a balance. I think I realize this as I speak several foreign languages, and I realize, okay, my accent as an English speaker, it's not going to disappear after 20 years of speaking Spanish, or 18 years of speaking French. It's not going to just disappear, no matter how hard I try, or how many hours of listening I do. I just have to accept the fact that, yes, I have an accent. And it's part of my identity, speaking that language. And so I think sometimes we place maybe a lot more emphasis on a native speaker's pronunciation. But I understand for children, it is important to kind of get their bearings, be exposed to an American pronunciation, or British, or Australian, or Canadian, or New Zealand. There's so many varieties to choose from, but yeah, I think it's good to include that in a lesson. But I think as people evolve as adult learners, I think it's important to become more and more exposed to other accents. And with your language exchange experiences, what are some things that you do in general?
I'm sorry.
For your language exchange experience, what are some things you do? Do you only speak with English speakers? Do you speak with other people?
Oh, yes. I don't speak only with English speakers. I also speak with people from other countries, from Italy, from Russia, from Serbia. Right now, several months ago, I also spoke with people from other countries like Egypt and India, etc. And in one side of it, it is a great experience to speak with people from other different countries. But in another part, sometimes I feel myself very confused, because different people pronounce the same word in the different way. And for example, I always pronounce this in my own way, and now I listen another pronunciation, and it is confusing me. I began to browse this word and try to listen who is mistaken. But it is an experience anyway.
Mm-hmm. And what do you feel are some of the most useful tips that you have or advice for making an efficient language exchange or something that works for both you and the other person? What helps for you?
The system, I mean, when you have regular lessons, it is very helpful. And I was very shy to begin speak with someone, with somebody in English. And it was my big mistake, because when you begin to speak, even though this person is from your own country, it is a big step for your way to learn English. It is really helpful. I think anyway we should try to speak and speak as more as it is possible.
Mm-hmm. And so the fact of being shy should not be an excuse for not wanting to engage in language exchange. Has the language exchange kind of boosted your confidence in speaking English?
I'm sorry, Jonathan, I didn't understand.
Sorry. Okay, no problem. But has speaking in a language exchange, has it helped improve your confidence? Are you less shy to speak in English now?
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. And yes, sorry.
I just want to say that last days I speak in English more often than I speak in Russian with my friends.
And, oh wow! Okay.
Now I feel myself not so shy. Of course, I'm a little bit nervous sometimes, especially when I'm not sure that I understand the question well. And for example, when I try to explain something and I understand that I forget the word or the words, but it's not a reason to stop speaking. It is a reason to speak more and more.
Mm-hmm. I think, just like what you just told me, that if you had not understood the question, I think that's not a problem. I think it's important to kind of ask me to say the question again or rephrase it. And I think many language learners, I think we are very shy, and then we don't necessarily have the tools to say, I don't understand, or please repeat, or I think we depend a little bit too much on translation to say, well, I don't understand you. Can you translate that? Or the audio is really bad on this call. Can you write that down? I think we find different excuses sometimes to not continue engaging and maybe admit that we didn't understand, or please repeat. But So I agree with you. I'd say it's important to kind of be able to tell somebody, sorry, I didn't understand, no problem. Can you say that again? Can you explain this? But the more you are using the language that you're learning to explain that, I think you develop even more confidence and you gain more vocabulary and you gain more tools to use the language and not just stop when there is a communication breakdown.
Yes.
Well, okay. And how would you say in terms of, like, it's hard for me sometimes to judge my Russian as I see it kind of on a daily basis, but have you seen some improvement through regular sessions? How would you say my Russian was before October, and how would you say that it is kind of recently?
You know, I see the progress in your Russian, because anyway, when you practice, it is practice makes perfect. And in October, you spoke in Russian more slowly, and you. I'm sorry, Johnson. Now it's my sound.
Yeah, sorry. Another commercial break, no problem. So I think we will end the conversation soon. But you were saying, yes, I spoke a lot more slowly at the beginning. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you use the same words, you know, the same constructions, the same phrases. And now sometimes I'm surprised when you begin to speak in Russian, because you begin to use different words, more words. And for example, you begin to, you speak, you use, I don't know how to say, the verbs in their right forms. You use the right form of the verbs, and you don't mix the pronouns, and I don't know how to explain. You use the pronoun with the verb in the right way.
Okay, so the correctness has been improving, I could say it that way. Okay, so so it's not a problem. To kind of analyze this a little bit, I could say, so if I spoke slowly and I was using the wrong words and mixing them up and I had a very limited vocabulary, that it's a start, it's a beginning. I mean, nobody's perfect at the beginning. You have to start somewhere, and I think that's true. I don't necessarily observe that as it's happening on a daily basis, but it's similar to when you see children and there's somebody, a visitor, like an aunt or an uncle or a grandparents, who say, oh, you've grown up so much, and okay, yes, you're getting bigger. I think those little time lapses, they help to see, like, what is that learning process? And I do realize now that when I'm speaking, I need to practice more, as always, but I do realize that, okay, I have gained with the speed, even though the words might be a little bit wronger, or might still be wrong, but at least the speed is picking up. And I do realize that sometimes, that especially with the Russian, where I have to conjugate the verb, I have to get the noun declension, I have to get the adjective declension, there's just so much reflection and thinking that has to go on just to be able to get a simple sentence of a subject, a verb, an object, where in English, I just don't have to change any of that stuff. It's just the word as a subject is not, it doesn't change if it's an object really much. So I get so used to just getting these words just out in a sentence, but with the Russian, I have to just really simplify it so much that it almost becomes painfully simple of just these three words, and to get those three words correctly in a sentence, it's almost torturous sometimes. But as time evolves and there's more practice, this becomes faster, and the accuracy, I think it does increase. And I think I've heard a couple podcasts, for example, what is one of them I heard, like All Ears English, I think they've said, okay, like progress, not perfection. And so I think it's important to focus on making little steps of getting better, speaking a little faster, and not necessarily striving to be perfect, because that's even as a native speaker, and I'm speaking English right now in this interview, I am making my own mistakes as an English speaker in terms of am I coherent? And that's not a problem. I think there's other people who would recognize this as maybe when you speak Russian, I mean, you're not perfect all the time. So that is not our necessarily our language goal as language learners. We just need to improve little by little over time, gradually over time. But the idea of being perfect should not be this kind of unreachable objective that's going to frustrate us.
Yes, I agree. And nobody can be perfect in anything, I think.
Yeah, and that should not be necessarily the end goal. I think it's the process, the learning process that needs to be baby steps and kind of improve. And I think recording ourselves or keeping a diary or keeping notes, I think that helps us kind of see those time lapses of how did we speak here? How are we speaking now? How do we see ourselves now? And I do see when I've made some of the recordings of how did I speak Russian at the beginning of October, and it is a bit painful to watch, but now there is improvement. Now it has been improving. And I would say definitely thank you to you, because there's been a lot of language exchanges that we have done in those past months. So now that's been
welcome.
And I've seen also for your English, it has definitely been improving. So, well,
I hope so.
It still continues to improve. And I definitely applaud your efforts, especially to be speaking in an interview in English. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. So I won't take up too much more of your time, but so I would say if people would like to get in touch with you, that should be through the Facebook group or on VK or GoSpeaky. Which platforms do you prefer?
It's not very important for me.
Oh, okay.
I don't mind of any platform.
Okay. Well, I can share the link in the show notes if people would like to practice some English with you or practice some Russian with you. So, okay. So thank you very much for coming on the show, and if people would like to take an English class with me or hear more about my language meanderings, you can visit my website, hugginsinternational.com. That's HUGGINS international.com. Or you can send me an email at hugginsinternational@gmail.com. So thank you very much for listening to Maria and me. And thank you very much, Maria, for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking with you as always.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So I'll talk to you soon, and paka, paka.
Paka, paka.